Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island since 1988. Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find 312 Wheat Ale, Big Juicy Beer Hug, and so many other limited releases at either of Goose's locations in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My co-host is Greg Kot. And if you want to be the first to hear these bonus podcasts, become a Sound Opinions member on Patreon. Greg, this is a bonus that we are cutting only a few hours after we learned of the death of Tina Turner, an iconic figure for decades in rock and roll, in soul, died at the age of 83. We're going to pay tribute in just a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in and inspired by Chicago. They got 312 Wheat Ale, Hazy Beer Hug, and many more one-off beers at the Fulton Street Tap Room or their new Salt Shed Pub. The perfect place to go before a show at the Salt Shed. Me and Andrew were there on opening night, Greg. Mm-hmm. It was really exciting. You had Rocky Mountain spotted fever, tick fever. I'm sorry about that. Anyway, every time we go to one of these Goose joints, there's another new one to try, and we love them all.
I'm a fan. In addition to making great products and event spaces, Goose Island has always been a supporter of music culture in Chicago and nationwide. I mean, if you see that Goose Island logo at a venue or a restaurant, you know you're in good hands.
Yeah, we are proud to be associated with Goose Island. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer, and Sound Opinions is. Sound Opinions is brought to you by NordVPN. NordVPN is the gateway to secure and private access to the internet. We all need that. And it works by enveloping all of your online activities in a layer of encryption while also hiding information about your virtual location. Greg, before I had a VPN, I was sitting in a doctor's waiting room, and boy, did I get hammered with a virus. I mean, I go to the doctor and get rid of a virus.
Well, safety from viruses is one of the great uses of NordVPN. It's an incredible tool. It's easy to use. You can connect with just one click and enjoy the amazing speed on every major platform, from Windows to iOS to Android. Now, this summer, I'll be doing some traveling.
You're going overseas.
This is a necessity. You know, you've got to use this. I know I can count on NordVPN to help me easily access secure connections on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere I go. You know, it's easy to get hacked these days, right?
Yep.
This will help. It also makes it easy to access paid subscriptions to streaming services and content, even if it's not available in the country I'm in.
So you can watch your Netflix while you're sunning it in Europe.
Absolutely.
If you want safe access to your favorite streams, social media, and more, no matter where you are, get an exclusive NordVPN deal here at nordvpn.com/soundopinions. nordvpn.com/soundopinions. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link's in the description of this episode. All right, welcome back to Sound Opinions. Greg, we hate to do these on-the-fly tributes to legends that it seems like we can't live without, but if anyone deserves us marshaling our resources, it's a tribute to Tina Turner.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, with Tina, the thing that needs to be right up front is what a groundbreaking artist she was. Everybody kind of knows the Ike and Tina Turner story and mm-hmm. the abusive relationship, and you know that's kind of the public image that she's been saddled with. But to me, the most fascinating part of her career was the reinvention of Tina Turner, engineered by one Tina Turner, because nobody really wanted to sign a woman of color in her mid-40s, in the mid-80s. I mean,
no.
It was the MTV era. you know, Tina Turner, old news, right? What happened to her? We don't really need to sign Tina Turner. We've got all these much younger acts coming up the pipeline to fill the MTV airwaves.
And
you know?
Starting out with a country record when she tried to come back originally, which was clearly not, you know, her strength, and then to succeed the way she did. Armloads of Grammys, acting roles, hit singles. Yeah, Tina came back in a big way.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the huge hit was, you know, What's Love Got to Do With It on the Private Dancer album in 1984. And, you know, when I interviewed her years after that, she said, I hated that song.
Yeah.
She goes, I did not like it. It's this eensy teensy song. I've been covering Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones in concert. I wanted to do rock and roll. What's this song? And she said, what turned it around for me is I'm driving through L.A. and a woman in a passing car, we're at a stoplight, and a woman in a car, she rolls down the window and says, what's love got to do with it? All right. Gives her the thumbs up. And Tina goes, that's when I realized she's talking about, you know, you're liberated. You can love who you want to, when you want to.
Right.
And it really gave me a whole different perspective on the song and what it meant to this young woman. You know, made me realize what I was singing and that people got it. They understood where I was coming from, as a woman and as a somebody who was reinventing her career. Beyoncé's and the Rihanna's and the Taylor Swift's of the world filling arenas now.
Yeah.
That wasn't done back then. A woman of color filling a rock arena or stadium as Tina Turner was by the late 80s, early 90s, was pretty unprecedented, pioneering in that regard. So everybody who's doing really well on tour these days, especially women, Tina quite a bit because of what she did, the road that she paved. So that's the first thing I want to get across. I mean, there's a whole history here, Jim, that we can take on. But
well,
I just think her groundbreaking efforts need to be recognized up front.
You're absolutely right. And before we get away from that woman rolling down the car window, back in 86, Tina told Rolling Stone, my songs are a little bit of everybody's lives who are watching me. Mm-hmm. You got to sing what they can relate to. And there are some raunchy people out there, or the world is not perfect.
Yeah.
All of that is in my performances. I think that's a brilliant quote. Anna Mae Bullock, everybody knows, born 1939, Brownsville, Tennessee, northeast of Memphis, spent her early years on the Poindexter farm in Nutbush. Famous quote, often repeated, we were well-to-do farmers, Tina Turner said, until World War II comes along and the family has to relocate to Knoxville for a time. Tina's parents did not have an easy marriage, and of course, Tina Turner didn't. She said, was often asked, and she spoke honestly about that horrible relationship with Ike Turner, who was abusive, who was a drug addict. And she said, every time I have to tell the story, I'm reliving that.
Mm-hmm.
But she told the story because she knew other people drew strength from it. She was still a teenager. Still in high school when she went to see Ike Turner and his Kings of Rhythm. Now, Turner, you know, in 1951, under a different name, it was Ike Turner and the Kings of Rhythm, but under Jackie Brenston and his Delta Cats, they released what is generally considered 1951 as the first rock and roll record, Rocket 88. And they were a great pair on stage. You know, Ike had always said, I wanted vocals like Little Richard, and he got much, much more from Anna Mae Bullock. You know, you begin to dig into the great obituaries. New York Times did a great one. Rolling Stone, of course, I've read Tina's autobiography. How did Anna Mae Bullock become Tina Turner? Well, she married Ike for the last name. She was enamored with the movie serial Sheena, Queen of the Jungle.
Yeah.
And so Sheena became Tina.
Right. Sheena is a punk rocker. Tina is a soul dynamo. One thing she always said to me is that the recordings were just sort of like a dress rehearsal for the stage show. That's where those songs really took on a second life. And thankfully, we have plenty of video footage of Tina, you know, in her Ike and Tina days,
yeah,
performing.
Yeah, great, great footage.
You know, I mean, performing like dancing and singing simultaneously like her hair is on fire.
Dancing
in
doesn't...
In high heels.
Dancing doesn't quite do justice to the gyrations on stage. I got to confess, a lot of those 80s hit records I thought were overproduced, and then seeing her perform live,
yeah,
that was where, you know, you really heard the soul of Tina
well,
Turner.
Well, you know, and I got to say, the 60s stuff that she did, you know, those were blazing songs. I mean, I thought that, you know, the harder edge stuff was just amazing.
But there's just one thing, you see, we never ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough.
And I really appreciate the fact that a lot of rock performers got it. You know, they
yeah.
were like,
yeah,
they're amazing. The Stones had them opening for them in 69, and
not only
Mick Jagger is... standing at the side of the stage yeah. with his jaw hanging open.
He's taking notes. He is taking
no
notes.
Kidding.
I love the Phil Spector single. It's controversial, River Deep, Mountain High. But, you know, Tina loved it. She said in her 86 memoir, first time in my life, it wasn't just R&B. There was structure. There was melody. I was a singer, and I knew it could do other things. And, man, that's one of the all-time. I think if you had to stock a jukebox with only a dozen singles, that'd be on there for me.
Yeah, it was a towering achievement. Spector, of course, was disappointed that it didn't go number one.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're right. Tina would say, you know, Phil respected me as a singer.
Mm.
The unsaid flip of that was that Ike really didn't want me singing. He wanted me yeah. up there belting my lungs out.
Phil
you know?
Spector, also an abusive husband.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, boy, some trouble that Tina went through. And, you know, raised four kids, you know.
Yeah.
And she told me that one of the reasons she waited so long to get out of this abusive relationship is she wanted to make sure the kids got out of school.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she wanted to see them through that. And then she left and basically derailed, you know, her life and her career.
She left in 1976 mm-hmm. with 36 cents mm-hmm. and a gas card
right.
in her pocket.
Right.
I didn't know this, but Anne Margaret, who she'd been in Ken Russell's film version of Tommy by The Who, Anne Margaret put her up for a couple of weeks to
yeah.
get on her feet
yeah.
and really helped her. And that was that's an interesting side note there.
Yeah, no, it's interesting that people took note of it. You know, I think she was gone, but never really truly forgotten. I mean, the guys in Heaven 17, you know,
that was the
did
beginning
some
of
collaborations
the comeback.
With her in the early 80s. I mean, who
the
would have thunk it, right?
The beginning of the comeback was,
yeah.
was recording with Heaven 17, and that's a great single.
It is, because here we are, you know, they're on top of the game then with the synth pop
yeah.
era and the, you know, the whole new romantic movement, and they bring Tina in, say, you know, you got us. We're the reason we're doing this.
Well,
you know?
How do you make the Temptations' Ball of Confusion better?
Yeah.
Tina Turner.
Yeah.
Okay, that's the only way you can, right?
That's right, and they did an Al Green cover, which she brought back again on her early solo records. You know, she kept the flame lit. She was never ready to quit. And I think one of the big issues is that nobody at the major labels or any of the record companies really understood what they were going to do with her. Like, okay, you're,
yeah.
as I said, you know, you're a woman in your mid-40s of color, and what are we going to do with this? And she really did have to push, and start over again. Can you imagine starting over again at that age
no.
after the success that she'd had? And she did it. You know, the fact that she was able to sort of reinvent herself. And I remember going to those shows in the late 80s, early 90s, when she had come out with the solo records. And I thought, the solo records are okay. I like some of those songs.
It's that 80s production.
It's, you know, they're pop songs that were perfect for the day. But man, the stage show was still on fire. She was absolutely a dynamic performer right to the time she stopped touring.
I thought the live shows brought those songs to life. I'd never have to hear the recorded versions again. You know, interestingly, Greg, you know, we didn't even mention Mad Max, right?
Mm-hmm, right, right.
You know, Tina said she preferred, later in life, she preferred acting to singing because she could step into another role. And as much as she loved singing, I thought that was a, you know, wow, to have a voice, that gravelly, soulful voice that she had. And I say, I guess I'd rather act, but I'm happy to have this success in music. You know, also successful, I think this is inspiring. In 1986, she meets a German music executive, Erwin Bach. They became a couple. They lived in Germany for a time, but she died in Switzerland. They were living in Switzerland for decades. And true happiness finally seems to have come to her late in life. He was there at her deathbed.
Yeah, it was great for her. You know, she was a very private person. She did have this public persona, and there was a private side to her. And, you know, she didn't really want people to feel sad for her or pity her in any way. She just sort of said one day she announced, you know, I'm not going to tour anymore. Mm-hmm. And you sort of go, okay. Mm. You know, she lived for that stage. And you just thought, okay, maybe things aren't going so well. You know, it turns out she had a stroke. She had cancer. She was dealing with all sorts of health problems
Kidney failure. Last
decade. Yeah, it was rough. But at the same time, she went quietly. But what a remarkable legacy she left. And I think, as you said, people can take comfort from the fact that she did reinvent herself, not only as an artist, her life.
Yeah, a survivor.
And it was a happier ending than a beginning for her in so many ways.
Well, so if we have to play one song, what would it be?
Well, that's a great question, because, you know, I don't really want to revisit the Ike and Tina days.
No.
As much as I admire the music from that era, there's so much baggage associated with that. You know, I really like that song, Better Be Good to Me. From the comeback record.
Yeah.
You know, it's either that or I Might Have Been Queen, but I think Better Be Good to Me, just the way she sings that, you know, and it's almost like, okay, I'm not going to take it anymore. Nobody's
right.
ever going to treat me like that ever again.
Yeah.
Better Be Good to Me from Tina Turner on Sound Opinion.
Better Be Good to Me from Tina Turner, dead at the age of 83, rewrote pop music over the last half of a century. If you want to hear more of these bonus podcasts, please go to soundopinions.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. The show is produced, as always, by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, and our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Thanks for listening, and hoist one for Tina.
Yeah.